Willis can stay, but Wade is out. Hey, girls and guys, I'm Brandy with an I, and this is Did You Hear the News? What's up? What's up? We have 2 weeks of news to get through, so let's get on with the show. On March 7th, Joe Biden delivered his State of the Union speech. And there was a lot riding on this speech because, of course, as I've talked about on the show, Republicans have successfully painted a narrative that the media have picked up that Joe Biden is too old to be president. Now, do I wish it was younger? More Springer Spryer person running? Absolutely. However, Joe Biden's who we got. We all know he's old. I don't think that his age keeps him from doing the job. That's just me, because he's doing it. Like, he's literally doing it right now. He's got one of the youngest, most diverse cabinets under him. The administration can handle it if he were to croak. So I don't put too much emphasis on his age, but you already know it's been a big deal. The right loves to talk about how he's just old and feeble and senile and has dementia, like just diagnosing this man on TV when they don't even have any kind of medical history to do such. But anyways, the stakes are super high for this State of the Union because of all of that. Now, once again, as I mentioned, since the right would want us to believe that basically Joe Biden is tap dancing on the line between life and death, really, he didn't have to do much to clear the bar. Like, the Republicans put the bar in hell. And literally all Joe Biden had to do was be on this side of the earth to clear the bar. And so when he came out swinging, like, immediately in the first few minutes, talking about abortion rights, looking straight at the Supreme Court, saying you're about to find out how much electoral and political power that women have, like, he was getting it. He was forceful. He was energetic. Once again, like I said, the bar was very low. So all he had to do was show up and not fall asleep, not slur up all his words. He just had to be there almost pretty much for him to clear the bar that the right and media have set. So I thought it was a very good speech. Once again, like I said, he started off talking about abortion. He started basically talking about all the things that he's done, all the bills he's got passed, the CARES Act, the CHIPS Act, the Infrastructure Act, all of this stuff that he's done. Basically, it was like the whole first maybe 30 minutes of the speech before he even said, you know, the state of our union is strong. I thought it was like very ingenious to kind of talk about, okay, here is what I have done. And then here's where we are. And then here's what I want to do. So he mentioned, of course, like, I think he might have mentioned canceling student loan. They had some guests there, like the first lady had one lady who was doing IVF in Alabama. She had Kate Cox, who was the lady in Texas who had to leave Texas to get an abortion because it went through the courts and then it went up to like the appeals court and then maybe like the Texas Supreme Court, and she was denied. So she had to leave the state for an abortion. They had, like I said, I think one guy whose student loans had been forgiven. There were like a whole host of different guests that sometimes he called out and had to stand up. So that was nice. He did, like I say, mention things that he wants to do going forward, like for homeowners or first time homeowners, he wants to give a credit similar to the child tax credit that will go out monthly. Things of that nature. Once again, I thought it was a very good speech. And of course, at the end, he wrapped it up talking about how old he is. Like, I'm an old man, but my idea's young. Get with it, get lost. He didn't say that, but basically, like, there's a clear choice. Like, I am the one who's trying to keep your freedoms and, you know, make sure that they're codified in the law. I'm going to codify abortion if you give me a Democratic House and Senate, all of that stuff. And great. Like, that's, those are the things I want to hear. Like, remind people what you've done. Let us know what you're trying to do. Let us know how you differ from the other guy. Now, of course, this drew criticism from Republicans. They said it was completely a political campaign speech. And I'm like, honestly, I don't really know how else you deliver a speech in which you are trying to talk about where we are as a nation, but also clearly you're running for president in the same year. Like, of course, you're going to want to tell the American people what you're doing for them, what you have done for them, and what you want to do for them. You know, they weren't going to be satisfied either way. They couldn't call him sleepy. They couldn't say he was old. So they resorted to, it was a campaign speech. It was divisive. He sounded so angry. But the guy that they support literally gets up at rallies for 2 hours and just spouts on and on about how he is aggrieved and he's a victim and all of that stuff. So I don't take these people seriously. After the State of the Union was the real comedy. The reply from Senator Katie Britt. If you thought the Joe Biden State of the Union was divisive, then look no further than this reply, which literally brought the whole world together in recognizing how totally cringe it was. They got my girl Kate Britt, and I say that very loosely. I don't know that lady. We probably would never be friends. They got my girl in a kitchen, at the kitchen table. Now, I know that they thought about it and they said, oh my God, this is a very, very good idea. Let's put you in this kitchen, girl, at the table so that you can talk about kitchen table issues. And I know they thought it ate. I know they thought it ate, but it did not. It was not giving. This lady was very scary, honestly, in her performance. It was a performance. It was like a high school theater class monologue. There were fake tears. There were smiles during like super inappropriate times or like super deep, serious subject matter. It was just like she hopped from emotion to emotion. And once again, she looked kind of crazy because she's literally sitting in a kitchen. I mean, Republicans, Democrats, independents, all alike. I did not see not a one person. Not a one. And I'm talking about, I left my bubble on the internet, my corners of the internet where I feel safe, in search of just one on either side who would be like, girl, that was very, very good. She was really speaking to me. And absolutely not. Absolutely not. They wanted that to appeal to suburban housewives. And there might have been some out there with joint Facebook accounts that, you know, can't get on Facebook and say how cringe it was because their husband has the password and stuff like that. I don't know, but I didn't see anyone from any age range, party, socioeconomic status who thought it was a good reply. It was literally scary. I saw a lot of comparisons to some character from Handmaid's Tale. I did not watch that show. I do not like to watch stuff that I feel like is relatable to real life. So it was just very tone deaf. Because it was really giving, like, girl, the Republicans put you in the kitchen because that's where they want you to be. On top of that, she, I think, already had money. Her husband is an ex-NFL player. Like, they got money. And it's a kitchen that looks plain. But when you look in the background, you can see they got, like, one of those refrigerators that looks like cabinetry. Like, those are not cheap. Like, it's a very expensive kitchen. And you're sitting here trying to talk to other Americans about their kitchen table issues. And girl, you do not relate. And we cannot relate to you. On top of that, maybe a day or two later, a guy on TikTok, God bless his soul, I can't remember his name, but I'm pretty sure you've seen the video floating around. If not, this guy on TikTok was like, you know, I heard Katie Britt telling this story about a migrant young lady who was sex trafficked and raped and was very horrible. And I was like, you know, I kind of want more information on this, like, because that's really terrible. And if that's really happening right now under Joe Biden's policies, like, that really sucks. But we come to find out after some wonderful sleuthing on his part that the story that she told was not true. So I'm going to call it a lie. Others might say she embellished or she misrepresented a story. But in the story, she made it seem like this young lady was trafficked and raped and sold during the Joe Biden administration because of Joe Biden's border policies. When it turns out, this young lady is a woman who was basically sex trafficked and all of that stuff in Mexico back in the early 2000s while a George W. Bush was president. So this did not occur during any Democratic administration. It did not occur in the United States, and it wasn't because of Joe Biden's policies, as her speech would lead you to believe. And she has not really apologized. I don't believe she will apologize. She just kind of said, well, I obviously said it was a woman, like I didn't give a time frame. But it's like, you know how irresponsible that was because you framed it like it was something that was happening here and it was Joe Biden's fault. And that's just a reminder that these Republicans are so low down, they'll do anything. They'll do anything to fearmonger. Every time it's an election, there's a caravan coming. The caravans never show up. Am I saying immigration is not an issue? I'm absolutely not. It is an issue. I don't know why the Biden administration waited so long to actually say it was an issue. Like, they never want to call it a crisis. I don't understand that. Just get out in front of it. Immigration is bad right now. We don't have a handle on it. We're trying to understand why these other countries are having such a influx of people leaving to come to our country. You know, Kamala Harris was in charge of that. She went to those countries in Central America. South America. And it just seems like they just were running from the issue, and I never understand it. And now we have an actual bill that would literally, as Republicans want, shut down the border, and they won't do it because Donald Trump wants to run on immigration. So that's that. That was the State of the Union. Like I said, it was really good. If you didn't have a chance to watch it, just watch it. A lot of people polled said that they felt like America was going in a better direction when they looked at the State of the Union based off of what was said, keeping in mind also that most of the time, State of the Union people that watch it are people who already support the current presidents, kind of like, you know, let's check out what our guy has to say. So keep that in mind. But also, it was a pretty decent jump. I think it was like a 17-point jump of people who felt like America was not going in the right direction until they watched the State of the Union. So Joe Biden, old AF, we all know he's old. However, the alternative is even worse. So that's that on that. Let's talk about the orange guy, because he's gone through a lot continuously of his own making. So, as you know, the former president was found liable for rape, sexual assault, but the judge made clear it would include rape. It's just unfortunate that New York's standards or laws don't necessarily include what happened to E. Jean Carroll as rape. But for all intents and purposes, the judge said it was indeed a rape. So this guy was found liable for rape and also defamation. He was ordered to pay E. Jean Carroll almost $90 million. He has to pay hundreds of million dollars for the fraud case with New York Attorney General Letitia James. So Each and Carol's lawyer's like, listen, we don't care what you got to do. We don't care who you got to see. We don't care what you got to sell. We want this money. Don't call me. If it ain't about the money, don't call me. So Trump put up the 83, I think 85 million. However, he needed to put up a bond, which was about $90-91 million. And it just appeared like he did not have that money. And they were like, well, what you going to do? Because we need our money. And interestingly enough, that same weekend, Viktor Orban, who is the president of Hungary, an authoritarian who the former president absolutely loves and adores, came to visit him at Mar-a-Lago. And he rolled out the red carpet. You would have thought that literally this was a state dinner and this guy was still president, the way that he acted when Viktor Orban came. And then it's like, I'm not saying that it's connected, but like, next thing you know, he had $90 million for the bond. Whew, that is crazy, because where did that money come from? And why did you suddenly get it after Viktor Orban visited you in Mar-a-Lago? Either way, E. Jean Carroll and her lawyer were like, we don't care where you get the money from. I need my money. So they accepted his bond or whatnot. So that is going through appeal. The Letitia James judgment is also going for appeal. He's going to have to give all these people a whole lot of money. I don't know why he keeps prolonging it. All of his legal issues are just, they're going to bankrupt him. Maybe, you know, his daughter is now his daughter-in-law is now the co-chair of the RNC. So she has already said all the money that they get should go towards making Donald Trump president. I'm sure that's going to include his legal bills. They have basically brought in Trump loyalists to run the RNC, and they're basically doing a complete takeover of the RNC for Donald Trump. Now, I want you guys to understand, Donald Trump is the nominee for the Republican Party. He and Joe Biden both clinched the delegates needed just this week to say that they are outright the nominees for Democrat Republican president. But the RNC was supposed to be neutral until the time that this guy actually got the nomination. They came out urging Nikki Haley to drop out. We need to get behind Trump. That's not supposed to happen. You're supposed to be impartial, right? These guys were like, no, like, we know who our guy is. We're going to even tip the scale if we have to. Which is crazy, and I don't think it's fair. And I think that if Democrats had allowed Joe Biden or Barack Obama to do that, it would be a never ending story is what it would be, because the news, Republicans would never let them live it down. Oh, it's the Democratic establishment. It's the same reason that Donald Trump claims he always says Obama is the president, not because he has the mental capacity of a goldfish, but because he says Barack Obama's really running the country and it's not Joe Biden. And I'm like, if I was Barack Obama, I'd like, keep y'all name out my mouth. Michelle Obama, keep my name out your mouth. I don't want to be the president. Michelle Obama has told you that multiple times. I don't know why y'all keep bringing her up. I don't want to even be near that house no more. I'll come visit, but I don't even want to spend the night. I don't even want to have to be there alone. I don't want to be there. I'm not running for president. And my husband is for sure not still running the country from the house. We on vacation. I got my hair braided up. I'm out the country. Keep my name out your mouth. But anyways, so it's the same thing, right? They say, oh, Barack Obama is running the Democratic Party, when it's like, no, he's not. Like, he's at the house. But Donald Trump is quite literally running the Republican Party. Everything they're doing is for him. People are leaving Congress because they're just frustrated how Congress is going. And those people might be replaced, most likely will be replaced by super right-wing radical Republicans, because all the normal Republicans are like, this is for the birds, we don't want nothing to do with it. So I just think it's interesting how one guy can come and take over a party, but continue to accuse another party of being taken control of, or like being basically run by these shadowy figures that are in the background and nobody can see. Anyways, that guy's got a lot of legal troubles. He was supposed to go to trial for the Manhattan District hush money case from Alvin Bragg. However, Alvin Bragg and team are now actually asking if they can have maybe an additional extra days push that case out, because they just got like thousands and thousands of documents or pages of documents from the DOJ. Because, as you know, like the DOJ has been investigating things, then, you know, certain state attorney generals or district attorneys are also investigating. So there's been like parallel investigations running concurrently. So what happens is now the DOJ was like, oh, well, we got this stuff. Like, if y'all want to, if it's helpful with your case, I guess you want to look at it. And so now Alvin Bragg and his office are like, well, yeah, we might need a little more time to kind of go through this and see what there is. It might be information about, you know, Michael Cohen, who is, they say, is supposed to be the star witness. He hasn't said that. No one has necessarily confirmed that, but we know he's most likely going to do something or testify because of the fact that he was so close to Donald Trump at that time. He is the one who made the payments. He is the one who has already gone to jail for Donald Trump before because of perjury. So he's most likely going to be a witness. And so any information that the DOJ might have about him or what they were investigating before might be helpful to Alvin Bragg's case. So they want to take the time to go through that. They do have a hearing set for that March 25th date, which was when they were originally supposed to start the trial. And the judge is like, listen, I don't want to hear nothing else about nothing else. Y'all just need to talk to me about, you know, why you wanted to delay this trial. I don't want to hear none of them other arguments. Please don't bring none of them other arguments here. Just come here and talk about why you want to, you know, delay the trial, and then we'll get to it, and then I'll make a decision. So that's what's going on with that case. The documents case in Florida, I mean, I just feel like the luck of the draw, Aileen, however you pronounce it, getting this case is just been a nightmare. She has already, the DOJ is basically trying to stop her from making documents public that are going to tell who the witnesses are, because they clearly don't want a list of their witnesses out, because Donald Trump does like to reach out to people and be like, hey, maybe you shouldn't testify, or go on Truth Social and say the same thing. So the DOJ is like, please don't release this, because people are going to see it and we don't want our witnesses out on Front Street. So much so that one of the witnesses actually came out this week and did an interview with Caitlin Collins of CNN. And she was like, why are you coming out right now? And he was like, well, I keep hearing that, you know, it's possible this is going to be made public anyway. So I was like, let me just get in front of it. I know Jack Smith was like, oh, mother effer. Because he does not want, of course, his witnesses going out there and telling everything before the trial. But also, like, this guy had not, he had worked at Mar-a-Lago for years, I think maybe like over two decades. And so he actually had moved unwillingly or unwittingly had moved classified documents without knowing to one of Trump's trips when he was going to Bedminster in New Jersey. He had moved those documents to the plane to go to New Jersey. And he didn't find out until later that there were actual classified documents. And then there's video literally showing that happening. He's like, yeah, here's what was happening. We were moving stuff. We just had these banker boxes. We just told to move them. I just moved what I told to move. And then later on, I found out, oh my God, like, it's classified documents in there. So a good witness to have. He basically, you know, explained how he was in the Trump sphere and he was around Renato a lot, Walt Nato. And basically he was like, you know, Walt had a very, I'm fine, Trump's going to take care of me. Like, you should let Trump take care of you. Let him get you lawyers. Of course, they offered to get him a lawyer. So he's like, no, thank you. I want to break away, do my own thing. I get my own lawyers. So I think he was kind of like, he knew the writing was on the wall. He wanted to get out in front of it. That's a good and a bad thing, because once again, on the record, you made these, you made these statements. So if you were to get on the stand and start saying otherwise, like it's a gift and a curse, because the Trump team can say, well, no, that's not what you said on CNN. But then also the DOJ could say, well, you know, that's what you also said in your interview. So we'll see what happens. Eileen she gave the Trump team like a chance to put in a whole bunch of motions. So, you know, they did. They tried to get the case dismissed because of immunity. And the first time she did anything that made sense, she was like, y'all, like, let's not play. I'm tossing that. It's not happening. So, but she is actively helping delay that case. She's just starting to try to make it look like she is actually competent. We don't believe she is. Once again, she was, I don't think, qualified for the job when she got it. She had only been in the job about 6 months. She's never tried a case, I don't think, especially not a big case, because she came on in 2020. It was around COVID. Everything had kind of paused. So really, this is like her first big case, and she's so inexperienced, and you can tell. Just remember, this is the same lady who basically said that a special counsel needed to come in and go through all the documents. So she and many legal experts was like, we don't know why she granted this. This is doesn't make any sense. This is only a win for Trump. And so she was kind of admonished that in the legal community. It ended up being overturned by an appeals court in Florida, which it I think had like two Republicans, one Democrat on it. And they were like, listen, girl, like, we don't know what you're trying to play here, but no thanks. They kind of slapped her hands on that one. So a lot of people say that they think that Jack Smith is kind of letting her do everything that she can do so he can make a good case against actually getting the judge switched. I don't know if that's the case. I think that would be kind of like it's kind of a risky thing to do, because then she's not removed from the case. She's probably going to try to do everything else in her power to delay this case. And we already know that the Supreme Court has decided to take up the actual immunity case. And originally they had said they would hear it on April 22nd, but that has moved to April 25th. So we'll see what happens there with the immunity. I mean, it's kind of quite obvious that he's not going to get, they're not going to rule that he gets presidential immunity, but it's about how long it's going to take for them to actually tell us that ruling. Like, it might not be until June when all of their opinions come out. So we'll see what happens. But for now, everything's delayed. Everything is delayed. We finally got a ruling in the disqualification about Fonnie Willis. And I'm proud to say that my girl gonna live to see another day. The judge did not rule that she had to get off the case, but he did say either you go or Nathan Wade goes, because I can't find the conflict of interest, but there is a appearance of impropriety. And so to cure that appearance, put Nathan Wade out. Cut ties from him, release him from the team, thank him for his duties. And we can move forward. And so, you know, Nathan Wade was like, yeah, I got to tell me twice. I'm going to go back to my job where I can actually get paid more money than $250 an hour. I don't know what y'all thought this was. Like, I'm over here getting rich off this case, and this fee is so cheap, I'm basically working for free. So he sent in his resignation, and Fonnie accepted it immediately. She was like, thank you for your work. I mean, to be fair, Nathan Wade has done a tremendous amount of work on this case, months worth of work, years worth of work, honestly. And so it's going to be hard, I think, for her to find someone who's going to come in and have to basically learn this whole case. She could try to find someone from outside again, but once again, we already know she asked more than one person before him, and they all said no because of the fact that they fear for their lives. She could get someone in her office to do it. We just know she's most likely not going to do it because of all the other cases that are going on. Like, she would not have time to oversee those cases and also this one as well. She did not get off scot-free. Like, she didn't get out completely unscathed. The judge really, really raked her over the coals. It was one of those things, kind of like the Her Report, where it's like, okay, God, like, we get it. He basically said in his ruling, like, I don't necessarily believe y'all, but I can't prove that you're lying, which I thought was kind of unfair because I was like, once again, that would mean that you're taking the weight of some gossip over the two people who are technically supposed to be in the relationship. And once again, I've already showed you, like, I got bills and a tax lien and all that stuff, and none of that was relieved. Like, nobody paid off my hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Nobody paid my home mortgage off. Nobody paid my country club fees. Oh, if you're wondering why I'm using specific examples, because that's exactly what Brett Kavanaugh got when he joined the Supreme Court. But Fani Willis went on a few trips and she paid her way, and that's a problem. So anyways, once again, you already know if you listen to the show, I feel like this whole thing was a sham to begin with. I feel like it was to embarrass her, to put her in her place. It should have never been public. It should have been the judge basically saying, submit me your stuff. You know, I'll look through it. I'll make this decision. Most people say that this is something that could have been figured out in the afternoon in his office. It did not have to be public. There did not have to be these long, drawn out hearings. It did not have to be this mess. Once again, Judge McAfee is also a young, inexperienced judge. He's never been on such a high profile case or something like this before. So we're just unfortunately at the mercy of our system that kind of just randomly gives cases to people. It's like there's nothing that has to go into it. You don't have to look at the magnitude of the case, like what it would bring. You don't have to look at any of that. You just randomly assign a case. And McAfee's like 34, 35, no offense. He's a little green. He's a little green. And that has shown in the way that he handled this whole thing. I think he knew, obviously, everything that he did, like somebody was going to be mad. So once again, kind of like Robert Hur, and we'll get to him because he actually testified in front of Congress. But just like the Robert Hur report, he had to basically throw some bones. That's how I feel. Like I have to admonish you here. Like I have to basically say in so many words, I think you guys are lying. I don't buy what you're saying or this, that, and the third. But at the same time, I don't see how what happened between you guys actually presents a issue for the due process of the defendants here. And that's basically what this whole thing was about. There was never a conflict that would prevent the defendants from getting their fair day in court. Like there nothing about it. You might can argue that it's unfair that they brought these charges against these people and they did that in the effort for them to get money through billable hours. But at the same time, let me prove in court why I'm bringing these charges, not you get to appeal it because you don't like who I'm dating. Like, it's crazy. And once again, her and Nathan Way had been broken up for like maybe a year or two by the time all of this had came to light. Anyways, I just, once again, I was really frustrated about it, how it was handled, because like I said, it was an unnecessary distraction. Everybody keeps talking about, oh, it contained a jury pool. Now the judge was basically like, I don't really think it attained a jury pool, because he did, once again, he kind of got on her about the comments she made at the church. He basically welcomed a motion from the defense to gag her if they wanted to, which I'm like, Donald Trump gets to go online. He's been posting like AI pictures of her and like bikinis and stuff like that. He gets to go online and do whatever he wants to and say whatever he wants to about these people. But you want to gag the DA? Once again, I understand there's a different standard, but it's like, gag all sides. Gag all sides. Because Judge McAfee actually had his ruling written up 2 weeks ago. Like, he knew what he was going to rule, But he wanted to make sure he had security in place for he and his family because he had already gotten death threats. So I'm like, the fact that you did all of this in the open, what do you think that that's going to do? It's going to continue to invite that same kind of craziness to Fani Willis in her life, Nathan Wade in his life. But it doesn't matter because you want to make sure that you keep your status among Republicans so that you can have a long career. Because guess what? Now he's being challenged in his race for mayor. So is Fani Willis. They both have primary people primarying them. I think there's two people primarying Fani. And he has a primary challenger also for his judgeship. So just like, give me a break at this point. But he did say once again that even though he didn't like those comments at the church, even though he didn't like any of this stuff, he was going to basically let her stay on. He didn't feel like the case was close enough to an actual jury picking process to taint a jury. So there's that. People smarter than me say that, like, this is not a good look for Fani Willis. It's not over. They can still appeal and then have to go, like, to the appellate court. However, they do say that judges typically have a lot of discretion in their choices that they make. So, like, it's not over, but it's over pretty much. They can move forward with whatever they were doing in the office. But I, like I say, I continue to say I think it sucks because reputationally, like, she took a hit. I don't think she made the best decisions or choices. Of course, I said that. I understand a want for a relationship to be private, especially after the fact that you've already taken on this high profile case. And so there's a want to keep it private because of the fact that everything you do is and can be attacked. But at the same time, you already knew what it looked like. I'm pretty sure she already knew what it looked like. And I think that's probably why the judge was like, I don't really believe y'all when y'all say when it started, but I also don't have any proof of otherwise because everything else was speculation and hearsay. So, Fani girl, I think you can come out of this if you just keep your head down, do your job, continue to do a good job. Well, I say good job, but people in Atlanta might disagree. However, continue doing what you do. I really want to see this case because after she testified, I really wanted to see how she basically would bring a case. But once again, she wouldn't be the lead prosecutor. So all that to say, once again, this was successful in delaying the court case, which is exactly what we knew that Donald Trump was trying to do. Of course, he was trying to just get it thrown out outright because he already probably knew that nobody really wants to go near this case besides people like Fani in her office. So that was really what he was hoping. That's not what he got, but still somehow MAGA thought it was a win for them too. I can't. All of the ways in which these people, their logic, I don't know. I don't get it. Probably because they were able to see a white man who basically used to work under Fani Willis admonish her on the level that's above her now. I don't know. But that's also what I heard was part of the reason why he was receiving threats, because he actually used to work under Fani Willis before her DA days when he was a young lawyer. And so they were like, well, you guys are, you're on the team of the left and all this. So it's just like, okay, whatever. But not everybody's going to be satisfied. I'm satisfied she gets to stay on the case. I don't really like the things he was saying. I really feel like I don't really like too many times when white men admonish black women anyway, but I really like the things he said. I didn't really like the nature of this whole thing at all, because once again, the focus was on the salacious stuff, not necessarily the facts of whether or not there was a conflict. So yeah, back to Robert Herr, who testified in front of Congress this week. Also, quick pen, I'd like to say that James Comer actually extended an invite for Hunter Biden to come publicly testify in front of Congress, and he said, no, thanks. I don't really know why. I didn't really get into it, but at this point, I think he's like, you know what? I've given you what I can. This impeachment is a sham. I'm not going to give any more time to it. So back to Robert Herr. Robert Hur basically quit his job as special counsel the night before the hearing and was like, I'm going to testify basically as a regular citizen. Whatever. Of course, he received questions and grilling on both sides. Like, Republicans grilled him for reaching the conclusion to not charge Joe Biden. Democrats grilled him for all the gratuitous language about Joe Biden's age. Once again, like they say in politics and Congress, if everybody's mad, then you probably made a choice right in the middle. However, I still believe that, once again, he did not have to say all the things he said about Joe Biden's age, which is crazy because the night before he testified, the actual transcript of the meeting with Joe Biden came out. And it, I won't say heavily, but it did contradict some of the things in the report. For instance, one of the biggest things that really upset Joe Biden was that Robert Hur said he did not remember the death of his son, Beau Biden. However, when you read the transcript, Robert Hur asked him about a specific time frame, I think from like 2017 to 2019 or something like that. And Joe Biden, in talking, telling his story, he's like, well, if you think about it, that's when Beau was either like serving in Afghanistan or he was dying, pretty much. And then Robert Hur was like, well, do you remember the date he died or when he died? And Joe Biden was like, oh my gosh, like May 30th. And then somebody in the room said 2015. And he was like, oh, was it 2015? And I'm like, yeah. And he was like, 2015. That is not the same thing as this man not knowing when his son died. Like, I've seen a lot of people kind of saying, oh, well, he just flat out lied. And I'm like, Joe Biden is very clear on clearly the month and the date that his son died. Was he a little off about the years? Sure. I'm off about years all the time. This is not to make excuses, but don't ask me on the draw about years that a lot of things happen because I'm not going to know immediately. Like, I literally might have to sit and think about what was going on in relation to time for me to realize what year it was. So to try to make it seem like this man did not know when his son passed away was just kind of a cheap shot because clearly he knows the day, he remembers the day. Very clearly remembers the day, like his son passed away. It was just kind of nasty. And then on top of that, this man is saying, oh, Joe Biden is so old, like his memory is so terrible. But in the transcript, he literally is like, yeah, so it seems like you have a photographic memory of the house or like photographic memory. He said that in the transcript, but he never put in his report like, while at times he seems to have a photographic memory about some things, like he can't recall others. No, it was straight up. His memory is just so bad and it's failing him. And there's no way I can bring charges against this old well-doing granddaddy because he don't know. But when you go back to the transcript, you see the things that he asked Joe Biden where he said, I don't recall how the classified documents get, or, you know, do you recall saying, I just found the classified documents? He's like, no, I don't recall saying that. Okay, well, do you recall how the documents got in your garage? No, I don't recall. He had already said, like, as far as I know, when the people packed the stuff up, everything was gone. So I really didn't go through the boxes. Like, it just is what it is. So I really don't know how it got transported. Like, it was packed up. We moved things. It, like, that's why I don't recall, which is what any legal person would tell you to say because you don't want to perjure yourself. I don't recall. To turn that into this man is so feeble. He don't have the mental capacity or a cognitive ability to even be held accountable. It was just kind of crazy once you got the transcript in front of you. So, you know, transcripts have not been working out great for Republicans. They did complain that they got the transcripts so late, basically, so they couldn't really spin up any lies. They had to basically be held to what was in the transcript the day of, which I actually think was a good thing because it didn't allow them to play fast and loose with what was said in the transcript. And of course, the Democrats were ready. Eric Swalwell, Jamie Raskin, Dan Goldman, they like Adam Schiff. They really held this guy to the fire. Adam Schiff was like, you're a smart man. you've been around, you know what you were doing. You know exactly what you were doing, putting this like loaded vocabulary and using such charged language in this report. You knew what you were doing. Eric Swalwell was like, so if we're keeping it fair and honest, now that you're a private citizen, are you going to take a role in the Trump administration? Because that's the point, right? Robert Hur is a young man. He still has a career that he obviously wants to keep flourishing. And Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party. So, like, I'm not going to charge him because there's really nothing to charge him on, but I'm going to throw him a bone by writing up the report in such a way that it harms him in an election year when people are campaigning. It's not far-fetched. He would not say that he would not take a job in the Trump administration. So that's where I'll leave you on that. A couple more quick things. This week, Chuck Schumer basically said that Israel needs to get rid of Bibi Netanyahu. I couldn't agree more. I thought it was great he said it. He's like the highest ranking Jewish person in Congress, like in history. So I was like, great. I thank you for saying that, because obviously Bibi got to go. Okay. He aligns himself with people like Trump, Viktor Orban, and the likes. So he got to go. We already see he's not doing anything to try to, he's not doing the most he can to try to help innocent civilians in Gaza. Like, Joe Biden and U.S. have to fight with him so that they can get humanitarian aid in, because they're not allowing it to come in through Israel. It's just a bunch of stuff. He's indicted in Israel. Like, basically, he's on the Donald Trump path to, I got to stay in power so I don't go to jail. He needs to go. The administration needs to be out. I can say that as my opinion, but apparently Chuck Schumer cannot, because of his position of power. Republicans did not like that. Mitch McConnell pushed back on it. But who cares what Mitch says? Not even his own party anymore. So people were really mad about that. But I agree, Chuck Schumer. I'm glad you finally said it. You should have said it a long time ago. Y'all should have been saying it a long time ago. Joe Biden, I've known BB for such a long time. And me and him are both. BB Netanyahu don't like no Democratic president from back to Clinton. Like, I don't even know why y'all sitting here acting like that. I understand Israel's our ally. I know you want to give them stuff that will keep them safe, like Iron Dome and stuff like that. But these people are really not, they're not with it, Joe, when it comes to what's going on in Gaza. And honestly, I don't think it's all Joe Biden's fault. I don't think he's writing a blank check, because, as you know, funding for Israel is still not passing the House. I think there should be conditions besides the obvious conditions that we don't give money to countries who are, you know, doing genocide. So I think that was good that Chuck Schumer did that. I don't see what all the hoopla is about. I mean, I see what all the hoopla is about, because it's basically, it would be a big deal, like, if Joe Biden said the same thing, because that's like, not only is it kind of meddling, but it's like, we don't want the United States trying to come in and like topple regimes. Like, we've seen how that goes and that happens. But I think you did a great job, Chuck Schumer, and don't back down just because Mitch McConnell got up and bumbled around and said you shouldn't have said it. And the last thing we'll talk about is the bill that was passed in the House to ban TikTok. Now, a lot of people think that if the bill passes in the House and the Senate, TikTok is immediately gone, and that's not true. What this bill will do is essentially the same thing that happened with the dating app Grindr. It would force the company that owns TikTok to basically sell it to an American owner, because at this time, TikTok is partially owned by a Chinese company called ByteDance. And in China, if they go to a company and say, we want your data, you have to give it to them. Like, there's, you can't say no, you can't say, oh, we're predicting, okay, you have to turn it over. And it has been a concern for quite some time about China getting access to user data for Americans or any other country, because of the fact that if they reached out to ByteDance and said they wanted, ByteDance would have to give it to China, because, you know, they are a communist country. And they have to abide by the rules. So it has been a thing for a while. Even the former president was for the banning of TikTok back in the day. However, he changed his tune when apparently he was reached out to by some lobbyists. Apparently, Kellyanne Conway might be lobbying for, or she's working with someone who's lobbying for TikTok. And so they reached out to Donald Trump, and now he's suddenly against banning it. There were lots of members, you know, in the House who were like, I don't like this for First Amendment speech, you know, all of that stuff. I just don't think it passes in the Senate. Like, I honestly don't think Chuck Schumer brings it because Joe Biden does not want to be the president who bans TikTok during an election year, knowing that Gen Z and Alpha, whoever is going to come after them, really use it for information and all kinds of other things. And he's already on shaking ground with them because, you know, the Gaza stuff. And I saying the Gaza stuff is not me at any point trying to minimize it, but just saying all of that complex issue, the young people are not really feeling him. So take TikTok away. Now, I know some of y'all can get on TikTok and y'all can scroll for hours and hours and hours, like money long. I'm not the same type of girl who can do that, but I know some of y'all can. So y'all were really upset about this and I understand it. However, once again, it doesn't immediately ban TikTok. It just would force them to sell TikTok to an American company. Not to say that they want to, because the owner, who is from Singapore, has already said like he's not really interested in that. However, that's what the bill would try to force them to do, sell it by a certain date. We also found that the former Secretary of Treasury for the orange guy actually offered to buy TikTok. So it's kind of like coming together, like now Donald Trump supports it because his guys are like, hey, we can make some money off of it. Let's buy it. So that's what's up with TikTok. I don't think it gets the time of day in the Senate. The president has said that if it came to his desk, he would sign it. Once again, I don't think that was well thought out. I think that it would be smarter if we figured out a way for all of these social media companies to be held accountable for the ways that they use and sell our data, including Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all the likes. I'm sorry, X, whatever we're calling it these days. So I think they should focus on that more so than just the banning of one app. So you guys can live to do your TikTok dances and make your money off of TikTok, you know, for your small businesses and save the bees and all of that stuff until they decide what they're going to do. So best of luck TikToking. I'll let y'all get back to that. Thank you so much, so much for listening to the show. I'm sorry I didn't have a show out last week. I was a little under the weather, but thank y'all guys for rocking with me. Once again, you can always find me on Facebook, Did You Hear the News? On Instagram, Did You Hear the News? Reach out to me. Tell me how you feel about the news. I'd love to hear from you. All right. Check you later. Bye.